Welcome to Radically Transparent, the number one podcast for the modern day marketer, presented by Octopost, the only social media and employee advocacy solution architected for B2B. Each episode shines a light on the inner workings of B2B leadership, including what keeps successful CEOs, CMOs, and VPs up at night professionally. The conversations are real, raw, and authentic, all while revealing the unfiltered, not-so-known truths of today's most interesting marketers. Introducing your host, Jennifer Gutman.
Hello, world. My next guest is a dynamic marketeer with a flair for brevity. Here to chat how AI is transforming marketing practices from data analysis to buyer behavior prediction is Sean Broderick, Director of Product Marketing at Sitecore. He's also been named in the top 100 product marketing influencers, and he's host of the Product Marketing AI podcast. Sean, welcome to the show. Are you ready to get radically transparent with me?
Jen, I'm so ready. I hope I'm not too brief, though, because this will be a pretty short podcast otherwise.
Yeah, well, this is called the Radically Transparent Podcast. So if you are brief, we're going to have to try to pull it out of you. But I don't think we're going to get there.
That's good.
Fantastic. So listen, one of the questions that keeps our audience coming back for more, we all live to learn about our marketing leaders, our fearless leaders, I should say. With the state of the world right now, which seems to be in complete chaos, I'm going to throw this question at you. What is keeping you up at night professionally?
What's keeping me up at night professionally is team management. And that is coming from someone who was, I guess, throughout my career, more of an individual contributor. It's only really been in the past 2 or 3 years of my career that I've actually had people in my team. So when I joined Sitecore 2 years ago, I had a team of three, and that quickly expanded to a team of nine and now a team of 10. And that's quite the shift in a pretty small window of time. So you're not just, you always, I think over time, you have this idea that, you know, you're going to focus on your own career, you're going to take new opportunities and try and develop and grow. But then all of a sudden, you've got this responsibility for 10 other folks who have got the same goals and dreams and aspirations that you have. So I would say that's the real thing that kind of keeps me up at night, because you want to make sure that you hold on to the really strong core of this team that you have in your organization. And the way that you've got to do that is not just regular engagement with them. It's about providing them with new opportunities, actual paths and roadmaps to actually get to the next level in their careers in the same way that I'm trying to do it. I hosted a session a couple of weeks ago for the Product Marketing Alliance and Product Marketing Misunderstood event. And it was around kind of finding your why. And one of my things is the Peter principle, and really trying to push that to its absolute limit, which is to say that you're promoted to the level of your incompetence. And I hope that I haven't got to that point as of yet, and I'm looking to kind of push on at least another couple of levels before I hit that upper ceiling. But, you know, I think it's really crucial, I think, for me to really understand my team's goals and for me to be progressing as well. Because I think one of the things that's very easy to do when you're managing a team is you get so focused on making sure that everybody has new opportunities and development goals, but then you almost kind of forget to position yourself and advocate for yourself to progress and grow. Because if you're not progressing and growing, the opportunities for your team to kind of fill that white space in the organization, the structures, it doesn't happen. So I think those two things together, my own career and the development and growth of my team, are absolutely the things that keep me up at night.
Yeah. So your explanation, do you sleep at all, would be my next question.
I weirdly sleep quite soundly, but one of the things that would certainly be the things that, if you know, you wake up, excuse me, if you wake up screaming at like 3 a.m. and you kind of have like a 3-hour window where you're like staring at the ceiling, get back to sleep 30 minutes before your alarm, and then wake up really, really tired. Those are the kind of nights, those are the kind of things that kind of play in your mind.
Absolutely. So listen, I think it's interesting that you brought up, you know, team leader versus individual contributor. I think there's a lot of interesting roles in marketing that we find ourselves being for such a long part of our career, that individual contributor. So I think it's really interesting that that's what's keeping you up. And I think it's something really important that should be keeping marketing leaders up. So we'll probably circle back to a little bit more maybe insight from you later on in the show. Where I want to ask and kind of get inside of your head, knowing that you have so much experience with product marketing, speaking to product marketers, is the question around sales enablement in product marketing. And I know in every organization, this is something done very differently, and each team owns different things or sometimes the same, but it's, if you're, you know, sales enablement in one organization, maybe you're on the product marketing in another. Where do you draw the line between sales enablement and product marketing in order to bring, you know, products forward and have a healthy, I would say, flow of knowledge and go to market?
Yeah, I think it's a crucial question for organizations. And I always think it comes back to the size of the organization that you're in. And I would say that at Sitecore, we're a company of about 2,000 people. So what you have is you have a reasonably large size sales enablement organization that sits inside of our chief revenue officer's team. And we work really, really closely hand in glove with them. So I think for us, it's around that kind of idea of kind of collaboration. There's that Venn diagram from a launch release marketing perspective. And it crosses over, I would say, quite significantly, because when we look to do enablement and training for new releases and new enhancements that are coming in the product, we want to make sure that our sales and our customer success folks are truly enabled. And we work with our sales enablement team so that they can have the raw material to create the courses which they're going to take, but also those dedicated sessions where they're going to learn that little bit more in depth, in detail of the real kind of value and drivers behind those. Because I think what one of the things our organization does really well is we'll make sure that we have the documentation, the technical writing, the background material for all of the different new product enhancements that we have. But we want to make sure that people really understand the value of those. So we can have the technical detail, you can have the documentation, the APIs, but you also need to make sure that people understand why this really matters to customers and the end users of the products. So what we created in the past year was something called an Ignite series. And that's a quarterly sessions where we go into each of our key product areas. We'll make sure that there is a technical track, a customer track, and also a demo track as well. So that when there's new enhancements coming to the product, that they can see it from a customer's perspective, they can see it from a partner point of view, but they can also see how it demos as well. So I think those are that Ignite series is kind of something that we've worked really hard on. I think as well, balancing the load of the time that it takes for sellers, customer success, solution consultants to really consume this is something that we've grappled with over time. Because when you put all of these our mandatory sessions into people's calendars, it becomes quite a load on them as well. So then you maybe kind of play a little bit more with the self-service model. You play a little bit more with the registration model internally. But then, like a marketing campaign, it can be hard to drive those numbers internally as well. So I think we're always kind of playing with the dials just to make sure that we are, you know, creating the right content, working with sales enablement, scheduling the right type of sessions that are really going to enable them effectively. But I think making sure that you're working really, really closely with that team is crucial, especially when the two organizations sit in different parts of the organization. In our perspective, product marketing and new product introduction sits inside of the broader marketing team. Our sales enablement function sits and reports up into our chief revenue officer in that structure as well.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting friendship between the two departments. And I think it's great to hear that you guys are working so closely together. And I'm glad that the Ignite series was such a success. I was trying to think on the fly of some AI joke I could throw in at the moment. But I think I'm just going to cut to the chase with the next question. So, you know, here at Octopus, we've been looking a lot at how AI is transforming the way marketers do their jobs. And so I'm just going to throw it at you. How is AI transforming your product marketing practices today?
I think one of the things that allows us to do is just be really, really fast. And I think to be able to kind of ship and iterate on new messaging in particular is really, really important. Because one of the things that we're actually doing at the moment is refreshing our broader messaging and positioning. And part of that is, you know, the grunt work at the start where you're talking to customers, you're talking to partners, talking to people internally and kind of bringing that together into new positioning and messaging statements across the organization at the kind of top line message, new company boilerplates, the level one presentations, the pitch decks, et cetera, and how that all flows through. But to get the right wording is really, really crucial. It's, you know, you have to get there by, you know, making sure that you're bringing people on the journey, that people have really strong input, that you're getting the value of what is really important in your organization. But to get to those, the kind of key words really, really quickly is difficult. There's a lot of folks to get there. So I think you have a lot of folks to bring on that journey. I think what AI and, you know, ChatGPT and a couple of other tools that we use helps us to do is to kind of iterate on those versions and really try and find the key words. Because I think in some cases, you know, you're in specific categories, you can kind of lean on some of those things because you don't want to get too far out there either, because people then forget and really don't understand what you're trying to talk about inside of your products. So I think in particular in the messaging positioning front, it certainly helps us to really iterate fast on new versions that we're bringing to the kind of leadership organization, bringing to the board for sign off. So I think that's really helped us be really fast in that regard. Something before that might have taken 6 months now is taking kind of 6 to 8 weeks, and you can kind of turn stuff around really, really quickly. And we're looking at kind of rolling that out over the course of the next quarter from April into June. That's helping us really strongly as well. We're also looking at, as part of our sales enablement function and also our kind of competitive intel and win-loss team, have also brought in Closed as a win-loss tool. And I think that's really important as well for us to use tooling like that to be able to kind of identify insights inside of interviews that we're having with our new wins and our losses.
The tool is called Closed, you said?
Closed, yeah. It's something that helps you kind of identify, you do your interviews with your customers, and then they'll take all the insights and collate those over the course of the quarter. And it also then helps you identify the right prospects for those type of win-loss interviews and deals. So all of those different tools are helping us to kind of get that a little bit faster. We're also looking at using some additional tools and tooling inside of our organization. I think I've had the opportunity to kind of speak to a lot of folks in the product marketing tooling space. One, I think, which is really interesting for product marketing teams is Ignition. And that is something that's going to help you drive your go-to-market, help you, I think, drive, I think, a lot of automated competitive intelligence, also competitive positioning versus specific competitors in your organization, automated release planning, information, checklist trackers. All of those things are going to speed up your day-to-day work and just improve your life as a product marketer. So those are probably the kind of three key areas that we're kind of seeing benefits from an AI perspective when it comes to product marketing.
It feels like it's such a breath of fresh air with you know, ChatGPT and AI saving us so much time. And what's interesting to me is I feel maybe it was like COVID time, 2020 up until today, we knew like AI was coming. It was like trending, you know, even if you were doing your due diligence, you knew it was trending. You knew it was something to keep an eye on. But I think what was interesting back then was that the marketing conversation at some point had shifted to like, should marketers now be under IT? I had heard, because majority of our MarTech staff was like super complicated to use and we needed IT to set it up. And people were saying marketers, right, need to be analytical and creative. And I think what I love about the introduction into AI into many of a marketer's, you know, day to day is the fact that we can kind of go back to the craft that we know and love, and leaving space for that strategic thinking, the creativity, the big picture building, and a little less, you know, operational, if you will, unless that excites you, right? Like you get right. Like, but at the same time, I think what's nice to see is that time that we're getting back, we can reallocate it to being that more creative and or strategic thinker that maybe before, if you're filling your jar with your big rocks and your pebbles and your medium rocks, there was no time. It was like, how do you balance this all? So it's a fresh breath air.
It is. I think it's like you say, it's, when you go from kind of one fire alarm to the next, it can be very, very difficult to even just have that space to really think about things and really kind of get creative inside of your role and to look to do new stuff. Because in larger organizations, there's so much elements coming down the track. There's always new releases. We've got like 11 or 12 different products that are all competing for that airtime, both internally and externally. And I think, you know, being able to kind of assess how you actually manage those and how you kind of stack rank what's really going to make a difference in the market. Those are the type of things that kind of these elements really help you with. And I think that there's certainly other areas as well that we're looking at that you'd like to kind of maybe look at some enhancements on our kind of Microsoft stack. The Copilot world is kind of obviously quite exciting as well. And I know that even from looking at some things around like Zapier and those type of integrations where you kind of pull in your recordings from your meetings, it links up into ChatGPT, automatically generates your minutes, your actions, and pops a draft email into your inbox so that you can send out your updates straight after the meeting. Those are kind of game-changing enhancements and things like, you know, sometimes you look at the end of your day and you're like, I got to write up the meeting minutes from that meeting. And you're kind of moving away from that kind of lower value work into something that's really, really high value and fast. And speed, I think, is just the key behind it.
Touché. Which actually leads me nicely into the next category of kind of thought, right? Which is basically AI governance. And I know right now the AI world and how we're using AI, we're all learning. It's still new. It kind of sometimes feels like the wild, wild west. And here we are entering, you know, our prompts into ChatGPT-4 with a lot of secret data or maybe data we don't want everyone to know yet. This is our go-to-market data or, you know, very interesting stuff that we need to have the outputs, right? Can you walk us through a little bit? What is AI governance? How are you tackling it? How do we think about it? What do we need to know about it, you know, in 2024?
I think we think about product marketing, we always think of our key stakeholders as, you know, we talked about sales enablement earlier on, the broader marketing organization, sales, customer success, solution consulting, demo, all of these super important functions. But I think the one area, I think when it, particularly when it comes to AI, that the product marketing team needs to be really, really tight with is your legal team. And I think we've got a phenomenal legal team here at Sitecore. And one of the things we've kind of put in place probably a couple of months back now is a monthly catch up with myself and Maura from on the legal side, where we go through any of the new product introductions that are happening, any of the areas where maybe terms and conditions need to be set up, enhancements to our product lines where some of those are maybe AI-enabled capabilities that are coming from third parties, perhaps. And I think just even from a product marketing perspective, how we use that tooling. So even when you think of, say, certain elements that you're looking for, different wording, like popping a one-liner into ChatGPT and asking for a different version of that or trying to find the right words or changes is perfect. But if you're popping our entire documentation stack and kind of IP that sits behind the curtain into ChatGPT, all of that is feeding that model. And what's internal to Sitecore very, very quickly becomes external. So I think one of the things we had, it was probably about November last year, we had a meeting with our product marketers to say, this is how you actually safely use these tools. You have to anonymize all of your data. You would not put something into ChatGPT that you wouldn't send in an email to somebody externally or how you would talk about your brand externally. So those are kind of are really, really crucial for product marketers. Get close to your legal team. It's going to really pay off, because I think when I would have had that feeling, even when, you know, you have legal issues or maybe you're buying a home or something like that, the legal aspect of it is scary because it's the unknown. But I think when you engage early and often with your legal team, that's crucial. I think there's a couple of key risks of AI when it comes to your own personal brand and your own corporate brands as well. You need to be able to protect brands and their IP. You need to make sure that there's no violation of rights and IP rights. We want to make sure that, you know, when we talk about Sitecore, that we're talking about one voice. We're talking with a steel thread all the way through all of our content and making sure that content that's created doesn't deviate from our brand guidelines, promote biases, different things like that as well. So I think it's always the case with us from a product marketing perspective, if in doubt, check with your legal team early and often, because there's nothing as bad as that period where you get the email in and it's like, oh, I should have checked that with legal. And then it's
We've all been there. It's a firestorm.
And those are like in the instances where those things come up, that also keeps me up at night. You asked me that earlier at the start of the podcast, but that will really keep you up at night because those are things that risks are absolutely enormous from a financial and reputational perspective for your organization. So product marketers, I'll say it one more time, get close to your legal team, make sure that you're engaging with them early and often.
I think that's great advice. And I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Because I know whenever legal, I get pinged by legal, my heart just stops because I'm thinking, what did I do wrong? What logo did I display that maybe didn't sign that I panic, right? But what's interesting, and I like the way that you're tackling it head on and you're being proactive about building that relationship instead of what we usually are is reactive to when we get that ping or that email.
Yeah.
Could you share a little bit maybe what you've learned about, I guess, through working with legal and yourself with AI and AI governance? What's one thing you wish you had known before maybe kind of embarking with the partnership you have with legal or even now that you're more aware, what's one thing you would want others to be aware of to help us all create our, you know, best practices for using AI? So number one, you know, I highlighted check in with legal often and make sure you have a strong partnership with legal. But what's some of the stuff you learned from the legal team?
Some of the stuff I think I've learned is that how incredibly thorough and dedicated legal teams are. And in certain respects, you're going to expect that anyway. But I think in a lot of cases, when you go and ask these questions, they've already been thinking about this risk mitigation well in advance of any other part of the organization. That knowledge and that IP inside the legal teams is already there. So we engage with them. We ask them, let's make sure that we know exactly what we're talking about here. And we're talking about AI, how we actually use the tools ourselves. And then, you know, we go back to them and say, you know, how should we really use this? How should we really think about it? And we go to them and they already have a flow chart of a decision tree created in advance that is able to say, you know, do I have permission to use this tool? If so, what do I do? If not, don't use it. And then if yes, and it kind of goes through all of this like 7-step framework. But the kind of the surprising thing for me is that they've already done this. Yes. This is already sitting there in many, many legal departments. And I think for us, it's just making sure that we're not afraid to go and ask that question. Because I think one of the kind of eye-opening aspects for me is that when we go to the legal team, they say, well, you know, we appreciate that people are using these tools. We're not going to say to you, well, actually, no, you need to do it. I think that's what people are afraid of when they're going to ask that question, that the answer is going to be, I can't believe you're using ChatGPT-4 or Pro. I cannot believe you're using that. You need to stop that immediately. Your investigation is going to be opened. They're going to look at your WhatsApp messages and your email message history. That's not the case. They have a real appreciation and a real, I think, level-headedness to how people are actually using these tools on a day-to-day basis to make their lives easier and help companies go faster. Because everything it's all about speed for me when it comes to AI.
Yeah.
But you have to use that speed in a very, very consistent manner. You know, our CMO, Kathy, did a presentation a few weeks ago and she talked about speed and the consistency of it. And she used the analogy of Max Verstappen. And, you know, he's super fast. He's the best Formula One racing driver in the world, but he's won the last 3 championships in a row. He's won 9 races in a row. So he's consistently quick. And I think making sure that you have that kind of consistency and speed in the combination of the two is really, really crucial.
Totally. So I know for you, AI and speed is, I would say, you know, in bold explanation point, one of the biggest benefits of AI. I want to shift for a moment around the idea of thought leadership, because what we're seeing in a lot of marketing teams, especially those who have or leading employee advocacy programs or helping, you know, put their executives front and center, or even right as us as product marketers trying to make sure our product is leading the way in whatever category or industry we're in.
Yeah.
With the use of AI, right, it feels like anyone today and everyone can be a thought leader. That it's very easy. You don't need to know much. You just need to know how to put some prompts into ChatGPT to spit back to position yourself as a thought leader. So with that being the case, how do you get authority or really become a true thought leader if everyone is using AI to become one or position their products as one. What do you think the new definition of expert, and I put in quotes, air quotes, will look like in the future?
I have this feeling that like people's Turing test type radar is so attuned now. So when I look at LinkedIn, and I predominantly use LinkedIn, I don't really use other social channels, what I see there is anything above 200-300 words is 8 times out of 10 ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And I think people, and you see the engagement with those posts, and I think a lot of that is kind of, it can be algorithm based, and they're like, well, LinkedIn likes longer posts, so people start writing longer posts. ChatGPT helps them to do that. So people's radars go off quite quickly, I think, in those scenarios. And I always come back to that, you know, the attributed to Mark Twain quote of, you know, I would have written you a shorter letter. Maybe it's not Mark Twain, but I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time. And it, there's an aspect to that as well, the kind of clear thinking from a product marketing point of view is thinking that's using the most littlest words as possible, things that people can understand. So you want to be as brief as you possibly can. I talked about brevity earlier on as part of my bio, and you reference as well in the intro, but making sure that you're distilling your thoughts down. And I would say as well, the thing for me, and my friends make fun of me all the time for posting on LinkedIn, but the reality is I post on LinkedIn maybe about once every two or three weeks on average, about maybe twice a month on average. But when I post on LinkedIn, I've got something to say, and I've thought about it. And
is it brief?
It can be brief. Some of them have been super brief. Some of them have been a little bit more long-winded. But it's because I kind of have, in context and in that moment, I'm talking about stuff that I'm really, really passionate about, or that I've got maybe some IP in or some experience in. And I think that's where people need to go back to, is that it's not necessarily the content calendar for a personal brand that you need to have for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I've got to post 5 times a week, and I'll post any old nonsense that comes into my head because this is what the calendar says. I think when you really have something that you're passionate about and you have a real point of view on something, and that could be a collaboration of other viewpoints or things that you've seen and other examples, but it's really honing in on the fact that where you've got something to say, you say it. When you don't have something to say, breathe, stay quiet. You can help amplify your friends' content, people that you know in the industry, things that you find insightful, quote, comment, engage, all of those other different things. But I think that's the key for me. When you've got something to say, say it. When you don't, that's when you settle down.
Well, I think that's wise advice. So with that said, the first call to action I have is, it sounds like when you do post, you have something really meaningful to say. So I would encourage everyone listening in to head on over to LinkedIn to follow Sean and wait for those moments, right? Those meaningful moments that Sean is going to post something that we can all learn something from. My last question for you today, speaking of LinkedIn, is what's one thing you can tell us about yourself that we actually cannot learn about you from your LinkedIn profile or if we ask ChatGPT?
The one thing I would say is it's a personal one. And, you know, I think any careers are a mixture of business and personal and all of these different things. But I'm a cancer survivor, and it's not something I talk about very extensively on LinkedIn or anywhere else. But over the years, and as more kind of time and duration has kind of gone away from that particular diagnosis, the more I'm comfortable talking about it, because I kind of see it as a position of strength. So in 2016, I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I went through the chemo, the radium, losing the hair, all the really hard stuff, the energy levels, all of those different things. But now I've pushed on and I've come through it. And I don't talk about it too much on LinkedIn, but I use that to kind of really put a focus on my health. I've got a motto, which is health, family, work, in that order. And I think those are kind of things that really kind of, I think, put things into perspective for me, so that when you're operating at a high level from a personal health perspective, your family life is in order, you're kind of putting focus on that, well, then your work will follow. And I think that's kind of the key part for me. And a lot of that comes from the diagnosis and the kind of rough time that I had over that period. And I think that's probably the main thing that people wouldn't know about me from LinkedIn. I have used that to kind of use my skills, I think, for use my skills for being on a board. So I'm now on the board of the Esophageal Cancer Fund inside of in Dublin and Ireland, and they're a cancer charity that helps promote awareness around esophageal cancer, which is in this kind of tract here, and that's an area that, you know, I would have certainly struggled with back during my diagnosis, and that would have really affected my voice. And I think if anyone hears any kind of throat clearing or anything like that, or coughs that in part of this recording, that's probably the basis for some of that. But that's the kind of key thing for me. So people certainly wouldn't know that about me from my LinkedIn profile. My friends will know about it. People that are close to me will know about it. But it's really just, I think I wanted to share so that everybody knows that, you know, for everything that happens on LinkedIn, everything that happens in AI, you know, if you're looking after your health, everything else will kind of flow from there. So that's basically it.
Well, Sean, I want to first thank you for sharing that. You know, if you're watching the video of this, you'll see I like start tearing up. So thank you so much for sharing that. For good health, cheers to good health. Many more years of remission, of health, happiness. I understand that. I also, when it comes to sharing, you know, those moments of life are hard. In 2018, my husband was actually diagnosed with stage 4 glioblastoma, which is a type of brain cancer. So I know this journey well. He's thriving. He was given a year to live, and 5 years later, he's still here. So I'm celebrating with you, and you warm my heart. So thank you for sharing that. I know a lot. It's very brave to share that. So thank you. On the topic of product marketing, AI, I know you're also a podcast host. So I'm just going to end our podcast with a little shout out. Where can we find your podcast? Tell us a little bit about the show, and we'll end out.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jen. And thanks for sharing, and all the best to your husband as well. It's great to hear that. Product Marketing AI is a podcast that is designed to make the lives of product marketers easier. So it shines a spotlight on the tools that product marketers use on a day-to-day basis to make their lives easier and make things go faster. Season 3, 4 episodes have been released. I've got 2 episodes left. And with Scott Brinker, actually, from Chief Martech. A lot of people will know Scott. He's the VP of Ecosystems at HubSpot, and also the CEO of Ignition, Derek Osgood. Episode's coming out in the next couple of weeks. You can find it predominantly on Spotify and on Apple, but it's on all your good podcast players. But I think about 95% of my listeners are either Apple or Spotify.
Yeah, sounds about right. So when you're done with Radically Transparent, go ahead and check out Sean's podcast. And Sean, thank you so much. It's been a blast, and thanks for getting Radically Transparent.
Loved it. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks for tuning in to the Radically Transparent podcast, brought to you by Octopost, the only social media management and employee advocacy platform architected for B2B. I'm Jennifer Gutman, your host and director of product and customer marketing at Octopost. If you love today's show and want us to create even more Radically Transparent content, we'd love for you to follow, rate, and give a raving review wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening on the Apple Podcast app, simply scroll to ratings and reviews and tap those 5 stars. For more discussion on B2B marketing, be sure to follow Octopost on LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. And of course, to gain access to all our free social media marketing and employee advocacy resources, head on over to www.octopost.com. That's www.octopost.com. Until next time.